couple of 3 weeks, so hopefully we'll be wrapping this one up soon. But this is a topic we need to study as we have young people that grow up, get older, have questions about what is the difference between churches? What is the difference between a church of Christ and denominational churches? These are questions that need to be answered. Plus, our faith can be fortified in the New Testament pattern when we study, do what Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 5, and examine ourselves whether we are in the faith. We need to do that as well. We need to examine our own practices and see whether or not they are authorized by the New Testament. We can't accept things merely on the basis, as we studied, of human tradition. And as Dennis even tonight read from Colossians chapter 2 there in the first several verses of that, human tradition or human practice or something that's handed down may or may not be right in and of itself. We have to examine the scriptures and see whether or not the ultimate source was God. But one of the things that we were talking about in unity and diversity and standards of authority, the did not want to make one point on the denominational pastor system, which bypasses all of this, and Bible authority, and places the authority into the hands of the leader of the church. God has safeguards against that. The common view that the preacher is the pastor, thus the leader, spiritual leader of the flock of the church, is denominational. It is not doctrinal. It is not biblical. The Bible always, every example of church leaders, lists them in the plural. They appointed elders in every church in Acts 14 and verse 23. Or in Acts chapter 20, when Paul called the Ephesian elders in verse 17, called them elders, he invited the elders, but then he called them pastors in verse 28. Peter does the same thing in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verses 1 and 2. So there's an established pattern on this. And so we learned there was a multiplicity of leaders, never just one. God's wisdom, I always say, can be clearly seen in that pattern. It's unscriptural to call a preacher a pastor if he is not a pastor, if he's not an elder. In order for him to be a pastor, he would have to be appointed by the church based upon meeting the qualifications of 1 Timothy 3:1 through 7 and Titus 1:6 through 9. If he meets the qualifications and is appointed, he can serve as a pastor, but only alongside at least one other man. Only. In other words, we can't make him a one-man pastor. It's only with another, because the New Testament pattern is consistent and replete on that. I was reading recently about churches being formed and established, and one of the fastest growing areas of church establishment is weird. The article was talking about how many people have gone into secularism, but they like the idea of community. They like the idea of interpersonal relationships, like religious people have in churches. That's appealing to people, and it provides a community basis for people and interaction, but they don't want the religion part of it. They don't want the Bible part of it. They don't want the morals. They don't want the ethics. They don't want to be told that certain things are right and certain things are wrong, but they want church. And so they call them churches. It's all built and based on the theories of atheism, humanism, and secularism. So their doctrines are secular. They value rational thought. They value materialism, material things. They don't focus upon spiritual things. So we've seen the rise in atheist churches or atheistic churches where people come together. They visit with each other. They share testimonials with each other. Now, an atheist testimonial might be an expression of his strong belief in maybe matter, or maybe physical things, or rational thought, or things like that. not the Bible. But there's some actual churches that are atheist churches that have names that are recognized as churches. For example, I stumbled across one called the Sunday Assembly, which has some offshoots from it throughout the country. The Oasis is another one. They celebrate atheistic identities and beliefs. But they call themselves churches. I found that interesting. And the reason they call themselves churches is because they like the idea of people coming together. In fact, the one called Sunday Assembly has services that include, notice the bottom point on the chart here, collective singing, reading of inspirational texts. Now, that wouldn't be the Bible, but what they find to be inspiration. You know, messages that might encourage people to think in a secular way, a non-spiritual way. But also silent reflection and, of course, collecting donations. You got to promote your cause. May have to pay for your facilities. But they call themselves churches. And another one that I noticed is called psychedelic churches, which I had heard of in the past, never talked about, where you really achieve spirituality through drugs, through illicit drug use. So basically the people get high, but in the context of church or in the context of a spiritual or spirit-based assembly, but this has nothing at all to do with the Bible. Has nothing at all to do with Bible-based religion or the God of heaven and earth. Has nothing to do with that. It has to do with humans. But psychedelic, so the use of drugs to facilitate that. I read of one church, they allowed people to be de-baptized. And that was about these people who had religious backgrounds and had been baptized. They wanted to erase that. So they would give testimonials, revoking, rejecting their baptism and saying that they had been brainwashed and that you didn't need to do that. Now, they even sent information to the churches that they were members of in order to tell them, make sure they know that they had been de-baptized. So it gets into almost as psychotic. People's minds, when they go that far, are not at all thinking in terms of truth. And then you might look at that first word and think immorality churches, because there are a lot of those. We'll be talking about those in the next point. But immortality churches call themselves churches, but their focus is upon physical immortality. And so they do various things. They engage in some, you might call religious services, but the focus is upon being able to live forever in the flesh. They practice life extension technologies like gene editing or cryonic preservation, and then hopefully, you know, later they can be resuscitated and get lucky. Somebody's figured out the technology to be able to bring someone back to life after being frozen maybe for 20 or 30 years. And it's a church. Immortality churches. And I thought, now I've read about immortality in 1 Timothy chapter 6 that Christ brought to light as a result of his death on the cross and his instructions to us that enable us to have immortality. The main one of these was called the Church of Perpetual Life. Church of Perpetual Life. So what they've done is they've seen the popularity of the idea of church and people getting together and sharing their thoughts and concerns. And thought, We need that. We just don't want the morals and the ethics and the doctrine that go with it. But back to mainstream denominationalism. One of the problems with denominationalism is their constant appeal to creeds. Most follow some creed. Most go back to 3rd and 4th century creeds. But many today have just basically made up their own. They have their own creed. But all of it based upon human opinion, human doctrines and ideas, things that have been handed down. The Bible constantly warns against this. There is a way, Proverbs 14 and verse 12, Solomon said, that seems right to a man, but the end of it, the end thereof, are the ways of death. Seems right. Is that ever true? Do people in religion get caught up in things that seem like good ideas, seem like good programs and activities and functions all the time. In fact, some operate only upon that premise, what seems like a good idea. Over in Isaiah 65 and verse 2, Isaiah said that he had stretched forth his hands to a disobedient people, a people who walk in a way that is not good, he said, after their own thoughts. After their own thoughts. That has a tendency to take us down the path of personal preference, personal likes and dislikes, and people build their churches around those personal preferences. Very dangerous. Jeremiah 10:23, Jeremiah said, O Lord, I know that the way of man is not in himself, it is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. This morning in Bible class, we studied Matthew 15 because that was one of the passages we needed to use in order to establish the definition of ordinances in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 2, the head covering passage. We were beginning a study on the head covering. What does it mean when it talks about covering in 1 Corinthians chapter 11? And we talked about the word ordinances there. Well, in Matthew 15, as we noted this morning, the word is there used, translated traditions, but it talks about the traditions of the Jewish fathers. Laws that had been made, rules that had been made about washing things, washing hands, washing cups and platters and things of that nature. And Jesus said many other such like things that you do in Mark's account in Mark 7. So they had a laundry list of requirements when it came to physical cleanliness and said that these are necessary. Now Jesus completely exploded, completely destroyed their argument, their insistence upon these things, because he said what you're doing is actually nullifying or setting aside the law of God by your traditions. But people do this in religion today and denominationalism. Or in the passage that Dennis read, he read my mind, in Colossians chapter 2, beware of philosophy and vain deceit after the traditions of the world, the traditions of men, the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ. We must be careful about those things. But I do want to talk about immorality. There are churches that are just immorality churches, just like there are churches that are immortality churches. Some are just immorality churches. And this is a growing problem. People want to be able to do what they want to do. So when it comes to God's divorce laws, one of the most commonly abandoned areas of truth by denominational churches, and the only reason that some churches have such large memberships is because of their policies on divorce and remarriage. Very lax, very loose, they do not insist upon the law of Matthew 19:9, divorce only for the cause of sexual immorality. They allow divorce for any and every cause. They basically follow the corrupt, godless laws of the land, civil law, and the policies of civil law on that, and become very loose on that. And churches pride themselves in their open-mindedness and acceptance of what we call adultery. Now, why did I say that? Well, because in Matthew 19 and verse 9, Jesus said, whosoever shall divorce his wife, except, unless it is for fornication. What? Adultery is the result for both the person who was put away and the person who remarries after that unscriptural divorce. And you have Luke 16:18 that mimics that, except leaves out the exception clause. Matthew 5 and verse 32, which emphasizes the results of causing someone else to commit adultery because it puts them in a position of unscripturally remarrying into an adulterous relationship. And then homosexuality and gay marriage have just been compromised on by denominational churches, some with great, huge, swelling memberships. And they have these swelling memberships because of this compromise. This morning I preached on the bystander syndrome, which permeates denominationalism. just absolutely will not. They refuse to speak out against anything, and they all agree to not speak out against things that are wrong because it might jeopardize their numbers, their growth. If you bring up the subject of alcohol, the use of alcohol, or dancing, I've talked to folks before who just never even had heard that dancing was sinful. Now, we're not talking about a husband and wife dancing together in the privacy of their home. We're talking about not husbands and wives dancing together. Dancing satisfies the definition of the word lasciviousness in the New Testament. It's condemned multiple times in the New Testament. And so, but some people don't even know that. Immodesty. Many, even churches of Christ, have become extremely compromised on in this area. And I'm told this constantly by people. And sometimes people will reluctantly admit this and say, well, you know, they don't. I'm going to such and such church now, and you know, they don't quite take the stand on things like immodesty and that type of thing that I was used to growing up. Yeah, and that's a problem. That's a problem. People need to stand up and speak out on these things, but denominationalism has done this for years. They've compromised on these things for years. Ran across this chart, and I put in this series back some, or this news item that I made into a chart a few years ago. It was just shocking at the time. Since this time, there have been many similar stories like this. This was happened in Washington, D.C. at the Calvary Baptist Church there. They hired a married lesbian couple to so-called co-pastor the church. You might say, well, Tim, now, co-pastoring is what you just advocated for a while ago. Need at least two of them, right? Co-pastor. Yeah, but not a lesbian couple of women. Where would you get authority for that? Think about what all is violated by this. These are churches just doing what they want to do. First of all, you're condoning fornication, specifically fornication that is lesbianism, homosexuality. What is the... People always expect us to go to the Old Testament. I've almost quit going to the Old Testament. You can go to the Old Testament. In Genesis chapter 19 or Leviticus 18 or Leviticus 20. But we're not under the law of Moses anymore. If we were, we'd have bigger problems than just those moral laws. We better get to killing some animal sacrifices in order to worship God in spirit and in truth. It'd be a list to be way longer than that. Be careful what you eat for supper or what you ate. There'd be many rules about that governing food cleanliness laws and all of those things. We're not under the law of Moses. But we don't have to go to the Old Testament. I threw a couple of passages in here. But in Romans chapter 1, actually one of the clearest passages in the New Testament is in the Bible is in the New Testament on this. Romans 1, verses 26 and 27. Paul said, for this reason God gave them up to vile passions. Even their women exchanged the natural use for that which is against nature. Likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one for another, men with men committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves that penalty of their error which was due. Now verse 32 says, of that same chapter says, who knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who do such things are worthy of death. A spiritual death. They don't repent. Not only do the same or practice the same things, but approve of those who practice them, which is what our society right now is doing. Working to get every person, even religious people, to approve of and say, now I know you may not want to participate in this behavior, but we need to be open-minded and accept this behavior, even in our churches. Even in our churches. Wrong. You know, the Pope just made a great big move in this direction recently, and he's just as sinfully wrong on that as he is on many other things. The Bible does not authorize. 1 Corinthians 6, verses 9 through 11. Some of the things mentioned in that passage of various sins is not only homosexuality, but sodomy. Last two words of verse 9. Those who do such things, verse 11, will not inherit the kingdom of God, or the end of verse 10, will not inherit the kingdom of heaven. 1 Timothy 1 and verse 10 talks about homosexuality. Jude 7, it's somewhat veiled, but we know what it means. He talked about the inhabitants of Sodom and Gomorrah going after strange flesh. Well, that's a term that the translators used of the King James. It's just a little bit vague. It's talking about homosexuality. And so Jude 7 condemns it. Well, as the Old Testament passages I mentioned, there's another problem with this. Women pastors. How can you have a woman pastor, given that in 1 Timothy chapter 3, in verse 2, when Paul is giving the qualifications for a pastor, he said that they needed to be the husband of one wife. If a man desires the position of a bishop. And incidentally, for those that may have not noticed this before, studied it before, in Acts chapter 20, in verses 17 and 28, the elders of Ephesus call pastors and bishops. Pastors and bishops. In 1 Peter chapter 5, in verses 1 and 2, the elders were called both pastors and bishops. So both Paul and Peter called the leaders of the church, of a local church, pastors, elders, and bishops. The terms are used interchangeably in the New Testament. So when Paul talked about desiring the work of a bishop or an elder, it's the work of the pastor. But he said this belonged to men. Men who would be married to a woman. So homosexual relations don't work. Lesbian relationships won't qualify. But one other little problem with this is we studied this morning, doing some groundwork for a study of the head covering in 1 Corinthians 11. We had to look at a couple of verses. Some think that just because the woman in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 wore some type of covering, whether it be the hair or be some type of external covering, that qualified her to preach in the church. That won't work. That position won't work because of 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 34, which is also talking about the exercise of miraculous gifts like prophesying and tongue speaking. And Paul explicitly forbade women to do that in the church. Now, Philip in Acts chapter 21 had four daughters who prophesied. And Paul talked about women prophesying at Corinth if they were, if they covered their heads, that is, they had the sign of authority on their head. But it couldn't have been to mixed gender audiences. Couldn't have been in the church because Paul said the women are to keep silent in the churches. And 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 12 is very clear on this. Paul said, I do not allow a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man. I've often wondered how a person can honestly, look in the mirror in a good conscience, argue with that. Is that not one of the clearest statements in the Bible? 1 Timothy 2 and verse 12. Paul said, I do not allow a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man. So these women are wrong on multiple counts, but that's a church of immorality. Denominational churches, denominational errors can sometimes be physically dangerous. Certain branches of Pentecostal churches and the snake handling movement that's been ongoing for years, just endemic in practice in certain parts of the country. And they feel so strongly about that. What are they misunderstanding? They're misunderstanding. Many of them have died as a result of being bitten by rattlesnakes and copperheads and cottonmouths. What are they missing? They're missing the meaning of fundamental Bible passages. Like Mark chapter 16 and verses 17 through 20, where Jesus talked about miraculous gifts. He promised those to the apostles. Others would be able to perform miracles, but only those, according to Acts chapter 8 and verse 18, who had the hands of an apostle laid upon them. What does that passage, and that whole, the whole verse, the whole passage is Acts 8, 14 through 18. But what does that passage teach us about the cessation, the life expectancy of miracles? Well, whenever that last person on whom the last apostle laid their hands died, that's it. It cannot be perpetuated beyond that. It's impossible. So there, now, we don't know when that was. I always tell people, when would that have been? Well, we don't know when that would have been. Depends on how old the last apostle was. Most people assume it was John. But regardless of who it was, whatever person, the last person to die, on whom that person, let's say John, laid his hands, that would be the end of the miracle age. And we know also from 1 Corinthians chapter 13 about the end of the miracle age. Things that were done in part, like prophecy, tongue speaking, gifts of healing, miracles, all of these would cease to be practiced when that which is perfect is come. And Paul explained in context, that is the completed revelation. The completed of the completion of the New Testament. Jude pointed to that time in Jude verse 3 in the New Testament. He pointed to it. That verse alone has led me to conclude that the book of Jude is the last book, as far as chronology is concerned, of the Bible, not the book of Revelation. And many people believe that, agree with that, but I have personally concluded it. Because Jude talked about the faith being once delivered to the saints in verse 3. One time for all times. Delivered. Completed. But anyway, they have to miss that, don't they? Misunderstanding Bible passages can lead to disaster. What about the purpose of miracles? People who think they can pick up deadly serpents and if they'd be bitten, be okay today. You know, sometimes people build up an immunity to that. You can deliberately do that with some poisons entering into your body. And people do that with bees. Bee handlers do that. And they just get to a point, some people do, where they are just not affected by being stung by bees. And I'm afraid I wouldn't be in that category. But anyway, some people, my papa was. He would just get stung. It'd just be all over him. He handled bees. He put up honey. Every year he did that all of his life. And he, it was funny to me, he'd just get stung and be nothing. I get stung, I'd be crying like a little four-year-old girl. It always hurt me. But people die from this. People die from, what are they missing? They're also misunderstanding the purpose of miracles, which was to confirm the word. That's what Jesus said in Mark 16 in verse 20. That's what Paul said, or whoever the writer of Hebrews was in Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 4. That's what he also said. It was to confirm the word. How many times must a fact be confirmed? Do you have to just keep confirming it over and over and over and over for the rest of your life? Once a truth is established, once it is confirmed, eyewitness testimony, once it is confirmed, it's over. We don't have to keep confirming that. It's confirmed. And that's what the miracles did for truth that was revealed, according to these passages. I came across this one time. A Zimbabwe so-called pastor who wanted to prove that he could do what Mark 16 talked about, decided he would cross a river named the Crocodile River and that God would miraculously protect him from that. Sadly, that man did not survive that trip. Now, he's, you know, allegedly acting based upon faith. What was he acting upon? He was acting upon a misunderstanding of and misapplication of Mark 16:17-20 that got him killed. And these snake handlers do the same thing from time to time. There have been several of those who have lost their lives because they misunderstood these passages and misapplied them. About out of time tonight. One of the great failures of denominationalism is that whenever they find that people in denominationalism, the leaders, the founders of these churches, when they get into a situation where they realize they do not have New Testament, that is Christ's authority for a practice, they go to the Old Testament. And this is very arbitrary on their part. It's very pick and choose. They do not go to the entire Old Testament and construct their religious practice around the rules of Moses and the prophets. No, they don't do that. Now, if you were going to use the Old Testament, according to Galatians chapter 3 and verse 10, you would have to do it that way. Paul said in Galatians 3:10, as many as are of the works of the law, law of Moses, are under the curse, for it is written, cursed is everyone who does not continue in all things that are written in the book of the law to do them. So if you're going to try to use the Old Testament for justification, be prepared to use it all. But people are not taught that, so they don't think that way. They just go to the Old Testament to justify things like what? The first one on the list would be instrumental music and worship. David used stringed instruments in worship to God. Well, yeah, I can go to 1 Chronicles 26:25 and read where the use of mechanical instruments in worship was actually commanded by God. The conclusion I would have to reach is if I were under the Old Testament, I would be obligated to use those instruments. In fact, every one of us, I made a point recently when I preached on this subject, according to those verses, each of us would have to do it. We would all be personally responsible to play some mechanical instrument of music. We're not under the law of Moses. All power, all authority has been given to Christ. We're under the authority of Christ, Matthew 28:18. Whatever we do in word or deed, do all by the authority, by the name of Jesus Christ. You may say, well, we need the tithing law to make people give 10%. We don't need the tithing law. 1 Corinthians 16 teaches that we give as we have been prospered. God, in infinite foreknowledge, is able to look and know that there's going to be a change in how economy works between a theocracy that the Jews were under and what we're under today. A complete separation of the civil rule from the spiritual rule. God took that into consideration, and the nature of things changed, and so he said, we give as we have prospered. When it comes to worship music, we must be careful. The Bible tells us to sing. The New Testament never tells us to play, and it never authorizes the use of mechanical instruments of music. That has to be fabricated by people. Church membership. We're told how that is accomplished in Acts chapter 2. It's not like the nature of the old. You know, under the Old Testament, people were born into a covenant relationship with God. If you were a Jew, what you did in order to become a member of God's kingdom was to be born. You didn't have to exercise any free choice at all. By mere virtue of the fact that you're born into a covenant relationship with God. We're not into that. Today, if we want to come into that, we do so by meeting conditions of salvation. We're simply not under the law of Moses today. Jesus fulfilled that, Matthew 5:17-18, Luke 16:17. Galatians chapter 5, in fact, in verse 4 says that if we seek justification by going back to the Old Testament, we what? Fall from grace. Fall from grace. Paul said that the wall of partition was removed, which allowed Jews and Gentiles, Ephesians 2:14-15, to have ultimate fellowship one with another when each met the conditions of salvation. They couldn't have that before. And why was that accomplished? How was it accomplished? By Jesus removing the law of Moses. Colossians 2 and verse 14 says he nailed it to the cross. So those are just a few key areas where denominationalism has failed people and continues to be wrong. We need to look to the real foundation. Real foundation, not built by some man or some woman, but built by Jesus Christ upon his own divine nature. That's where we first started the study, Matthew 16 and verse 18. Maybe there's someone here this evening who needs to obey the Lord. You want to be a part of the true church. When we say one true church, that's what the Bible teaches. If a particular local church of Christians does not follow the law of Christ, the instructions of Christ, the members of that church cannot be a part of that one true church. It's as simple as that. And then what did Jesus tell John the Revelator in Revelation 2 about Ephesus? What did he tell him to tell the church at Ephesus? That if they, that local church at Ephesus, if they did not repent of their sins, their candlestick would be removed. A church can have its candlestick, that is, the representation of divine acceptance of that church, removed. He said, I will remove it. I will take it away. Unless, he emphasized again, you repent. So we must all individually put forth our efforts and then collectively in the local church to do what we must do in order for all of us individually to be a part of the one true church. If you need to do it, you need to obey the Lord tonight, want to become a part of that, we want to assist you. Come forward as we stand and sing.